So,
hey,
RRR.
Yes,
we are actually going to talk about it.
We are finally going to talk about it.
Food heist, yes or no?
I do have a food heist.
All right, then we're going to RRR.
Then we're going to talk about RRR.
I will tell you right now.
Not Spider-Man.
We will not Spider-Man, but we will do RRR for a short time, spoiler free.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to get a huge spoiler discussion of it. So, yeah.
So
be prepared. Go watch RRR right now.
And then come back to this episode.
And then come back to this episode.
It is worth it.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of chicken, we were not on the podcast speaking of chicken, but prior to starting recording, we were speaking of chicken.
Uh-huh.
So speaking of chicken, there was a guy in Georgia who stole 20 tons of chicken. It was...
It's a lot of chicken.
Yeah. So it was frozen chicken.
Oh.
He was a truck driver.
Okay. Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah. So this might be related to the kit burglar.
Yeah.
Which is such a good name you came up with, and I love it. 41,000 pounds of chicken, and he didn't show up, and he just took off with it. He was eventually caught. He's been arrested.
Mm-hmm.
The cops got a tip that he was going to meet a buyer, and they found him. He had already sold 33,000 pounds of the chicken. He had...
Who are these people who are buying black market meat?
Black market meat.
This is not a thing to buy black market.
Well, like we've said in the past, it is almost certainly food or hospitality industry,
well,
right?
Yeah,
this is some fried chicken place.
You do not want mysteriously sourced chicken. Of all the things, right?
Yeah.
Like mysteriously sourced Red Bull, fine, right?
Yeah. It's in a sealed can.
Yep.
You can probably trust it.
Yeah. Chicken, like the single food that we were warned as children, could kill us the fastest, even though it can't really, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like you wash your hands 70 times when you are fixing chicken. This is not the thing to buy from a guy in a back alley.
Yeah.
Go buy gnocchi.
Gnocchi? If you're going to buy back alley gnocchi,
yeah.
It is arguably better.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the chicken, at time of arrest, he had... 7 pallets of chicken left.
Okay.
Instead of the entire 20 tons of it.
Is this, what's his name? Not Travis, but...
Tristan?
Tristan.
Is this Tristan?
Is it Tristan?
This is a guy named Christopher Thomas.
Okay.
He was hired by Pilgrim's Pride to deliver chicken and then was selling it on the side.
Okay.
And now that you mentioned who's buying this, I'm trying to imagine which fried chicken chain is the most likely to get back alley chicken. And I think
I'm not going to say
the
because...
The clear answer is like whatever deli is in the grocery store.
Okay.
Right?
Delis, sometimes they look...
Because the chicken's always overcooked in there.
But see, like the truck stop delis are worse.
They are.
Yep.
Like if I want fried chicken, it needs to be fried by some high school kid in the back of a Popeyes.
Okay.
Not a high school kid in the back of a Smith's grocery store.
Chicken,
I got nothing else. That's all. 20
chicken,
tons
chicken
of chicken.
Something dinner? What?
Winner, chicken dinner.
Didn't you have a story?
Do you hear my PUBG story?
Yeah. He told me you had a chicken story.
It's not a chicken story, except that I did get a chicken dinner. So PUBG, PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, it's the video game that started the Battle Royale genre.
Yep.
And I was playing it a couple of days ago, and Donald, our editor, producer guy, what do you do?
I make sure that you guys look really nice when the podcast gets put up on YouTube.
Okay. Our cosmetologist, he texted me out of the blue and was like, I didn't know you played PUBG. And I'm like, I hate this part of Steam. Everyone can see what I'm doing. And we were commiserating to each other about how it's very hard to be good at PUBG. And I said that it turns out both of us play it primarily as a stealth game rather than as a shooter game. How long can I survive by hiding? And then, I can't remember if it was the next day or just a couple of hours later, I was able to text him and say, I just won a game, first place, winner, chicken dinner, with 0 kills, 0 damage done.
So the other two people who were fighting it out were outside the zone and just died?
No, it turned out that at the end, all three of us were hiding in the same house. I was in... a room, and I'd closed the door, and I was waiting there with my gun ready to shoot whoever opened it. The guy opened the other door first, threw a Molotov cocktail, and killed himself. So, and you know, the fire clipped through the wall and I was like, oh, they're burning somebody in the room next to me. And then it said, he's killed himself with a grenade. So I was very, yeah, I won. I have to assume that that is more common than just me. But I wish that I'd gotten an achievement for it.
How many times have you won? Like one.
This is the second time I've ever gotten first place in a PUBG match.
Okay.
Because I suck at it.
I mean, here's the thing.
Okay.
Number one, we're old.
We are old.
Right?
I do not have the reflexes to play shooter games against people.
When my son passed me up, that's when I'm like, all right, officially, my reaction times are just, you know, I've played so much Halo and I can't beat him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But number two, those games attract a certain level of competitive player because one against 99 mm-hmm. and the whole streaming crowd. And so I can imagine that I've never played PUBG, but I tried. I'm like, oh, Fortnite. My friend made Fortnite. I ought to play mm-hmm. his game. And like for an half hour of utter frustration, I died without seeing who was shooting me. And the one or two times I saw someone, a castle appeared around them mm-hmm. in like under 3 seconds, like with a moat and like, you
and
know,
service staff.
Yeah. It's just like poof.
Yeah.
And then they're up in this little thing and like, like I never got a shot land on somebody mm-hmm. because the games are so tough.
Yeah.
And I'm an okay shooter player. Like I can't beat my son anymore,
mm-hmm.
but that means in a death match, you know, he'll get to 15 before I do. But yeah. I kill
but
him
you
plenty.
Can still hold your own.
Right?
Just to make sure that our audience understands your bona fides as a shooter player.
Yeah.
This was your bachelor party.
Yes.
We took you to a gaming cafe
Half-Life.
Somewhere and played Half-Life.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, or was it? No, it was Unreal. It was actually.
Was it Unreal?
Unreal.
Yeah.
We played Unreal Tournament.
And Micah was spawn camping.
Yep.
And laughing at us.
And
yeah.
So I got legit shooter cred. Mm-hmm. Played Wolfenstein when it first came out.
Very good.
You know, beat Doom with only the chainsaw, original Doom, and Doom 2. But, like, these games are...
They're very hard. Have you ever played any of the Red Dead Redemption?
I haven't played Red Dead Redemption. I haven't played any Rockstar games at all.
I, earlier this year, bought it and mm-hmm. couldn't get it to run and got it refunded on Steam.
Okay.
And then last week, bought it again... Because it's my daughter-in-law's like favorite uh-huh. game, and bought it, played an hour of it, and then got it refunded on Steam. I don't know. There's some of those kind of like that isn't really a shooter game, but it kind of is a shooter game.
I would
just
not,
could not get into
it. Put it in that category. I might put it in the moseying simulator category.
It's definitely a mosey simulator.
Yes, but my son really liked the second one. And from what I hear of them,
they're apparently amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What frustrated me more than anything else is, you know, there's like a 3-hour tutorial. I got through an hour of it. And every time it asked me to do something, the button was different. Pick up this with R. Now pick up this with E. Now pick up this with tab. And I was like, I'm getting this game refunded.
Okay. Well,
I want to make you play PUBG sometime.
Yeah.
You will hate it.
I probably won't hate it. I just won't be good at
it. I think that you would love it until such time as it disillusions you.
Yeah.
Because you can only get murdered by someone sniping you invisibly across
the
map so
many
times.
Yeah, that's
the
thing. I probably won't enjoy it. I mean, my favorite shooter experience of recent years is Doom Eternal. And I like frantic, get in there, shoot mm-hmm. a bunch of things, be in motion, enjoy the sense of being a superhero that can dissolve demons.
Do you remember Serious Sam?
Yes, I do remember.
That's still one of my all-time favorite shooters.
I've played several more of the Serious Sam since.
I've only played one and two. Are there more than one and two?
There are. None of them are as good as two. Two is the pinnacle for me of Serious Samness, but yeah.
Nice. Anyway, let's talk about RRR.
RRR, which, talking about over-the-top violence, and it's not that violent. It was a bit much for Emily.
Yeah.
And so, and her threshold is just kind of... She has not a super low threshold, but definitely what would be considered somewhat squeamish.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was over the top for Emily, and it didn't approach over the top for me.
Okay.
On the violent scale. So.
Yeah.
RRR, spoiler free. It was as great as everyone says. It's exactly what I was hoping it would be. And I loved every minute of it.
Yeah. So RRR, we've talked about this a lot, but if you, dear listener, are not familiar, it is a movie from India. Mm-hmm. Not actually Bollywood, is my understanding, that it's from a different part.
Yeah.
It's not Bombay. It's somewhere else, but...
It's from where Kalyani and Rahul are from.
Oh, okay.
Our friends of Indian descent who have shown up in my books. And
who sent me some stuff that I still need to read. RRR is ostensibly a historical epic about the Indian Revolution against British control.
Yeah.
And it takes two of these kind of famous revolutionary heroes and then posits, what if they were best friends?
Yeah. It mythologizes them. It doesn't try to tell the history. It is
a superhero movie.
Yeah. It's more like a retelling of Hercules, right? Mm-hmm. Like that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Or King Arthur. It's like, except they're much more recent individuals.
Yeah. And by the final scene in particular, you realize, oh, I'm absolutely watching a myth.
Yes.
And a creation story of a mythological hero.
Yeah.
Very over-the-top action. I don't consider this a spoiler because this is the pitch I give everybody. It's the kind of movie where somebody throws a leopard at somebody else. And
was it a leopard
like
or was it a tiger?
Craziest thing in the movie. It wasn't a full tiger, the one that he threw. Yeah, it was a smaller.
Okay.
Yeah.
Weaponized leopard. Yeah. So this director, Kalyani and Rahul, had been telling me to watch for a while because he made an epic fantasy and he's from their region. And they still want me to go watch that. So we're going to need to watch
that. That's Bahubali. Yeah. I can never remember where the vowels are in the word because I haven't seen the movie yet.
But RRR is like dream team, two famous actors teaming up with a famous director to make this kind of conflux. Yeah.
Really three famous actors because the love interest, even though she's a very small part in the movie, she's a huge, huge actress in India.
But the RRR originally was their names. The three, the director and the two.
The director and the two stars.
Yeah, they came up with things that it means.
Rise, Roar, Revolt is the one they put up on the screen.
But it was their names. So yeah, spoiler free, go watch it. It is awesome. So I recommend things that I love that are awesome but are also bad. Right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Like I famously really enjoyed Cats because... Mm-hmm. It amazed me with all the ways it could be bad. This is not an ironic recommendation for me.
Yeah.
It is a different storytelling paradigm, which means that they go over the top in ways that we don't as often, but we go over top in different ways.
In ways that they don't.
Right, exactly. And it's no more over the top than any bombastic American action film. It just does some different things are over the top.
Yeah.
The way they film it and things. It still is extremely touching. It has good characterization for this type of movie, right? This isn't Remains of the Day, right? Like,
no, but you do really love the characters. They become real people. The two main leads are very different people who go about their goals in noticeably and intriguingly different ways.
Yep. So
I will say as a recommendation, this is not something I told you, but I often find myself warning people. The very first kind of action scene is kind of brutal. Not gory, but it's just a lot of people being hit in the head with sticks.
It's violence against defenseless people.
Yeah.
That's the inciting incident. And from there on, that's the, like, I think Emily's biggest gasp was in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, and the two or three first scenes are specifically intended to make you hate the British occupying force so that then you can support the revolutionaries the rest of the time. So,
So there's the spoiler-free part. Like, it legit is as good as everyone was telling me. I had a blast.
It's one of my all-time favorite movies. I watch a ton of Indian movies, and this is definitely one of my favorites.
I want to watch more of your favorites because of this.
I've got a bunch. I've got ridiculous ones. I've got
I want to watch some
really
ridiculous
kind of
ones.
Modern dramas. There's one called Three Idiots that my friend Mahatab recommended to me and is one of the top grossing Indian movies, and it's kind of a critique of their educational system. It's really, anyway, we can watch a bunch more, but let's get into our spoiler review.
Spoiler review of RRR. So just I did not expect the opening to be as brutal as it was.
Mm-hmm.
From what I knew about the movie, like, you don't expect, you know, your superhero film to start with a little girl being ripped from mother's arms and the mother clubbed over the head with a stick.
With a tree trunk.
Yeah. And the way that it's framed and things was really nauseating, right? On purpose.
Yeah. In fact, it's so brutal that at the end of the movie, when you see the mom again, everyone is surprised she's alive.
Like, how did, but then you realize what kind of movie you're in. You're like, okay, this is a movie where someone can take a log to the head and survive it. But yeah, I did not expect that. But then I'm like, okay, I now get this movie. Mm-hmm. It's a very good pitch for what the movie is.
Yeah. Well, and the big fight scene that follows that, where Rom basically takes down an entire mob by himself through the power of being invulnerable to sticks in the face.
The power of determination.
Yes.
Yes.
He does. He fights an entire mob, and they don't hold back from showing, you know, he's breaking knees and he's crushing fingers and he gets beat up significantly. But and once you get past those two scenes.
I mean, the scene with the dad.
Oh, yeah. That one's also.
Is also pretty, but none of it's violence against, like, violence against a little girl and a non-combatant is a different sort of thing for me. But regardless, I saw that, and a lot of the time I'm like, boy, the British totally deserve it, but boy, the British can't get a break, because they're the source of all of our historical movies. Great villainy, and I mean, that's what happens when you...
I mean, that's the joke about the British Empire, is that their primary export is Independence Days.
Yes.
So,
But the opening showing us just how mustache twirling the villains was is good to set what kind of film this is.
Mm-hmm.
This is a film where there is one nice British person in the world.
Yeah.
And she's accidentally there. It
she
feels
just gets
like
drawn into the story.
Yeah.
I do like how right off in that very first scene with kidnapping the little girl, we get the "Do you know how much a bullet is worth?" speech.
Yeah, that's a great
speech.
Which they
remind us of halfway through, and then is the final scene.
It's so thematically great. It's a perfect,
Let me ask you, since we're in our spoiler section, at the end of the thing, like, the point of the speech is, don't waste a bullet on a defenseless brown person when you can just kill them with a stick.
I don't think that's the point. That is what it's saying.
Yeah.
The point is, the British Empire is rich and powerful, and nobody can even inconvenience us, right?
Yeah.
Nothing they do. I mean, that's what you said, but the messaging is more that the work that you do doesn't matter. The work that British people do, because it comes over on a British ship. It's made by
British men.
Right.
And so at the end, when they repeat that monologue back to him, part of me is like, yes, that's perfect to shoot him. Uh-huh. And part of me is like, no, wouldn't it be more demeaning to say he's not worth a bullet, just kill him with a stick? I don't know. I go back and forth on that. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that the irony in it is worth shooting with a bullet. What they're saying is, no, it's not worth it. It isn't. Like, you aren't worth us dirtying our hands with. Take what you brought and go.
Well, and that is, like, one of the coldest lines I've ever heard is, you know, he wants this bullet. Give it back to him, and he can keep it close to his heart.
Yeah. So I'm cool with it. I see what you're saying about the... But if they'd instead decided to pick up a club and kill him, it would feel more wrong to me.
Yeah, and it would feel like they were embracing his ideology, which they're not. And they're very much breaking away from him. So,
So you said during the filming that throwing the tiger, that whole sequence, you said, this isn't even the best action sequence in the film. I disagree. That is my favorite.
The big tiger
fight. The big tiger fight.
The midpoint when they bring the truck full of wild animals into the middle of the British party.
Yeah. My favorite moment in the whole film is when it opens and he's there. And
That kind of super slow down moment of all the things flying out.
Yep.
That's the shot which all by itself made me go, oh, this isn't just a good movie.
Yeah.
This is a great movie.
I can see why you like the second one better.
Okay.
The end one.
We're talking about, you know, riding on the shoulders.
Riding on the shoulders. Because, you know, that one is theme, right? It's things.
Yeah.
I can see why. I just like the over the top entrance mm-hmm. and things like that a little
that
bit
entrance
better.
Is incredible. You know, they have cast one of these men as the fire and one as mm-hmm. the water, and yeah. then you get the
That's
amazing
true.
Background shots where one has a fountain behind him and the other one has fireworks behind him.
And you even said during that moment, you're like,
symbolism.
Symbolism, yeah. yes. I wish that they had had a moment, a little Sam and Frodo moment, where when he's in the end action scene, mm-hmm. where he's like, I can't walk. They've broken my legs.
I mean, that's there. He just doesn't say it out loud.
But I don't think the other one knows.
Oh, I think, I don't know. Maybe he
He's
did.
Just done a little
I
bit.
I assumed that he knew.
How would he know?
Because they're best friends.
Right. I think if he'd said, I think it would be a little better if he'd, you don't have to be overt with everything. But in this case, he didn't
know. You wanted an indication that he knew.
And it might have been a little too on the nose, but this is RRR, right? Yeah. Things are on the nose. If he'd said, I cannot walk, and the other one's like, don't worry, I got you, right? Like, there's something there that I missed, that line.
And I definitely, you know, like you said, I love the animal fight. I love the scene with the tiger flying out of the thing. But thinking to myself, there's no way they're going to top this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do an entire fight with him riding on his friend's shoulders and swinging from vines and, you know, the one guy cocks the rifles so the other guy can shoot him. That tandem fight is incredible. And then the final fight where it's now we get to see them in full apotheosis.
Yeah.
Where they're going to like catch motorcycles out of the air and throw them at people. And
we look up the two revolutionaries after, and the one Rom.
Yeah.
There's a statue to the actual person, and it is that.
He looks exactly like the guy. Yeah.
And it's really cool because I thought, one mistake that wasn't a mistake was he gets caught, he gets thrown in, and then it cuts to like 2 months later or 3 months later.
Yeah.
And you're like, they would have just killed him by now. What are you doing? Why would you even cut 3 months? I don't get it. It's so he could grow the beard so he could be the statue guy.
Yeah.
And all is forgiven because he needs
the
hair. He needs to become the statue guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So yeah, I think I can agree that the animal fight is maybe the best one, but I was just so surprised and delighted they were able to find a new way to surprise me.
I was surprised there was only one song.
There's a bunch of songs, but there's only one that they sing
diegetically. One diegetic song.
Yeah.
I'm used to the assumption that a film out of India is going to have a song every half an hour or so.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I was surprised by the same thing. Watching it again.
Yeah.
There's a ton of music,
right,
and there's a ton of songs. And actually, there are two, because Bheem sings Kumaran Bheem Mudo when he's being beaten. So there's two songs, but that one is not the fun musical number.
There are only two there's only one musical number.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I thought that more songs would have been wrong for the film.
Mm-hmm, probably.
But I was expecting way more, and I'm like, how are they going to get so many songs? And the one they put in works really well. It's well executed and put into it. I will say
we do have the closing credits musical number as well.
That doesn't count. That's not diegetic.
It's not, well, okay. But it is a big song and dance.
It is a big song and dance. The romance.
The quote-unquote romance.
Quote-unquote romance. I wish they'd sold me a little bit better on the romance.
Yeah.
If I have a single criticism for the film that's like a legit one, not little quibbles.
The romances.
I'm okay with the like
Bheem and the British girl.
No, Bheem and the British girl is the one.
That's the one where you want more.
Yeah,
okay.
That's the one, like making him so incapable of speaking. I cannot see what either of them sees in each other.
Because she begins as such, you know, she is talking to him because she's kind.
Yes.
And then almost like instantly, from 1 minute to another minute, she's like inviting him into her house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just barely met you, but why don't you come in?
And the way she treats him is, it just feels weird to me because she knows nothing about him, can't talk to him, right? Like he at least saw her be nice, right?
Yeah.
Which is enough. But what about him, right?
Like, he doesn't do anything in front of her to say, look how awesome I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we all are like, yay, but
yeah,
we know him. Mm-hmm. We've seen him do a lot of kind and wonderful things.
So that's my one criticism of RRR is that the other romance I totally
The other romance is, you know, we loved each other as children.
Works.
I'm waiting for you to come back to my village. But yeah, I can't remember the girl's name, but Beam and the British girl.
Yeah.
I do like her a lot. I think that they, I mean, first of all, it is an Indian production, right? And so they are not thinking in terms of things like white savior. That's probably not on their radar because it's just they're going to put a British character in to show that not all the British were evil.
Which is appreciated, right?
Yeah. Like, it's nice. I think that even with them, I assume, not being worried about a white savior trope, she doesn't come across as a white savior either.
No, she's not that useful.
Yeah. She's just a helpful person who is kind and allows them to do a couple of scenes they couldn't do without her.
Getting used by Beam despite, like, anyway. That's my one criticism. Things it did that I liked. I did see the twist coming, but in a good way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were spending this whole time, and, like, my early assumption was that Rom was secretly a double agent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they pushed me right to the line of... Is he? And then they revealed he was. And that's like a really good way to do a twist because it gives you what you want, but it makes you question it. And so I really like how that played out.
They did a good job because he is so obviously a main character. And arguably the main character. It's definitely a buddy movie, but I think there's a clear winner at the end when even Beam is kind of in deference to him, please be my teacher. And so I wasn't expecting double agent. I was expecting redemption arc.
Oh, yeah.
And then when the twist showed up, I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense now. The pieces fall into place.
Yeah, I got double agent pretty early on.
Okay.
I'm like, the fact that he does all this and then still gets rejected by the British at the beginning, that's when I started to suspect. I'm like, he's too smart, too sympathetic, too knowledgeable and skilled to be doing this just to go up through the ranks. So maybe without that scene, I wouldn't have, but I'm glad they put that scene in for that reason. Like I wanted to suspect. And I think that aspect of it worked really well. They may have gone too far in the torture scene.
Torture scene is rough.
And because that's a scene where I'm like, can they really redeem him? Like, if he is a double agent. But then he lets the guy go, and then he goes through even worse himself.
Yeah.
And so they can. It does work. But I think that, like, torture scenes are cliche anyway. In real life, torture doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's just abhorrent. It doesn't get you what you want. And so I'm bringing a lot of baggage to this torture scene. Plus, he's secretly a hero, but he's breaking a guy's hand. And stuff. That's the scene that I think takes a step too far for me.
Yeah. The moment after, you know, when he breaks the guy's hand, that is one of the other secret revolutionaries.
Yeah.
And when he gets poisoned.
Yeah.
And he immediately turns.
Yeah.
And he's like, rather than take revenge on the prisoner, he's like, no, go live your life. That's where that redemption worked for me. That's where I started to think, oh, okay. He is a double agent, and it isn't fully revealed until later, but the fact that when he thought he was dying, his true colors immediately showed through.
And that saves
it. I thought it worked really
well. It absolutely saves it, right?
Yeah.
But I do think it's a step too far for me.
Okay.
Like, I would have preferred it to be a different kind of torture, right? Where it's like, I am going to do this to you, right? But maybe that's too American style of—
Whipping his best friend with a— you know, razor wire or whatever. That whole second act where you have the dramatic irony of, you know, they're best friends, but they don't know that they're on completely opposite sides of the issue. And then, you know, after that big tiger fight midpoint, they're not best friends and they don't know that they're actually both revolutionaries.
Yeah.
That whole thing I thought worked so well.
It was great.
The scene where Beam has to save Rom from the poison. And then confesses to him when Rom is too sick to say anything. It's just such a well-written movie. Even ridiculous things like the fight scene riding on the shoulders, the piggyback fight scene, is established early on. I love it.
Yeah. promise and payoff, right? Like, this is a thing that a lot of action films that I've seen could learn from RRR. Yeah. The main thing that I would like them to do is third act action scenes in a lot of films are just miserable. Like,
yeah,
they're there to be eye candy, so they're not miserable in that, but they're really bad.
They're often very bad. They're often very boring.
Yeah. Boring is what I'm looking for.
Especially a lot of Western ones.
Yes.
And the reason is because we already know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so with an action scene, with a fight scene, my personal philosophy is you either have to, you know, progress the plot in some way, or you have to show me something I've never seen, which is why I love like a Jet Li movie or a, you know,
I can give you that.
And so in like a lot of the MCU stuff, it's here's our story. The story has now ended. We've already had our character moments.
Yep.
And now you just have to watch them punch each other for 10 minutes.
I'll give a few occasional films the victory lap. You can have a victory lap if you've earned it.
Yeah.
Endgame gets a victory lap. You can just victory lap.
Well, and a lot of the big character moments came during the fight.
They did. Big character, yeah. They're not like transformative moments, but they are important moments. But yeah. But for me, if you just do a little more setup, if at the end that action scene is doing something a little bit more, like this one with we set it up and then we pay it off, but also theme, right? We're going to need to rely on each other in order to accomplish this.
Yeah. The first half of the fight where they're doing the piggyback.
Yeah.
And then the second half of the fight where it is, we have weaponized the jungle and our culture against you. The themes of fire and water are coming back. It feels like the culmination of something instead of now we just have to fight before the movie ends.
Well, that's how you get your victory lap.
Mm-hmm.
Second half of that fight is a victory lap and they earned it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how's that, Ben?